to stop what you're doing and listen. To stop what you're doing and listen.
You unlock this door with the key of imagination. Beyond it is another dimension. A dimension of sound. A dimension of sight. A dimension of mind. You're moving into a land of both shadow and substance, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into
the home team.
And here we go.
All right, so back for hour number two and the beginning of the 5 at 5, where I welcome back one of my patented mean questions to Jeff.
Oh, my God. Hey, by the way, this has been floating around. I guess it's Jacoby Brissett. Is he a rookie? Or is this his second year?
I think he is a rookie.
Okay, well, anyway you slice it, Bill Belichick is a head coach. I just read this. Has only started one rookie quarterback in his life. Eric Zier, 1995 with the Cleveland Browns.
The Z-Man.
How about that?
Well, then let's check, because I would hate for Zier to be this footnote in history but be joined by Jacoby Brissett, but I do think he is a rookie.
Because Garofalo was in his, what, second year? No, Brady, I believe, was a second-year player in 01. And I think he was a rookie in 2000. So that's a pretty neat little nugget there. Pretty neat little nugget. The Z-Man back in 95. That Cleveland team, they were getting pretty good.
I know.
Mark Modell moved, and that's a good 30 for 30 that ESPN did.
Yeah.
That's a really good one.
Yeah, he was a third-round pick just this past year, Brissett.
There you go.
Well, he was picked ahead of Dak Prescott, starting for the Cowboys. So, former Gator, once a Gator. Then he transferred to NC State. Now he's a Patriot. Is he starting tomorrow, or has Belichick still been kind of tight-lipped about whether or not Garoppolo is going to play, hasn't he?
His patented Bill, what's your injury report? Oh, they're all hurt and beat up.
Yeah.
He never really.
Well, Brady's always had that bum shoulder or elbow. What is it that he's had?
Oh, yeah. When I was tooling through 5 points this morning, I was listening to the ref after the morning show, and one of the sports centers said, oh, yeah, he's been typically tight-lipped. It's like, I'm sure Belichick's like, oh, yeah, yeah, Grump, 80% chance he plays. It's like, nah, we'll decide when the game comes around.
Yeah, I like they're all beaten up.
They're all beat. Yeah. Who's hurt? Everybody is.
Yeah.
Literally, he'd have like
whole team's hurt.
Well, you get 53 and you can dress 47. Is that right?
Anyway,
it's like he would literally just list every player on the.
Well, I think
report.
Isn't Brady's been listed as probable every week or something?
I love the old.
But they eliminated something. Questionable or probable.
They probably took probable out.
Right.
I would guess, because what it was always probable, questionable, doubtful.
And then
and
out. Yeah, he out.
He out. Brame, are you probable or are you day to day?
I think we all are.
Was that a Charlie Steiner line?
No, that was. I think that was Dan and Keith.
Okay,
he's day to day, aren't we all?
Then again.
Yeah.
Aren't we all?
And then I always liked too that when they show football highlights and someone would fumble and they would say, like, you know, Emmitt Smith stripped, only of the ball though.
Only of the ball.
Yeah. Yeah, those are the good old days of SportsCenter.
Oh, man. Oh, back in the 80s. It was very good. It was actually informative.
And yeah. Well, yeah, I get that they've had to
– I know.
They've had to change because you don't need to go there for highlights anymore. We all have the internet now to do that, but still just – I'm not sure I really need people yelling at him.
No.
It's the yelling, and then sometimes it's the topics, too. Like, really, enough with Tim Tebow and the Mets. It's a joke.
It's a total joke. And then also, I know how that business works, too. There's no way that, say, Stephen A. Smith and Skip Bayless literally disagreed on every topic.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, so, all right, you shout about this, you shout about that, and it's just – I mean, I was telling Chris, sorry, one of the best – shows I've seen was a couple of years ago. There was a draft show, and it was Herm Edwards, Bill Polian, and Ron Jaworski. There was no yelling. They were all three just talking about ball.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what this guy. Oh, here's I like this guy. Yeah, I like him too. It's like, well, I don't know about this and that. Nobody yelled at each other. They were just talking ball.
Right.
What the 32 teams needed. You know who these players were. What they could do was tremendous. Like there is a Sunday morning show that comes on that's got Sal Palantonio, Jaworski, and I'm not big on Merrill Hodge, but it's just an informative show. It's not
debate.
It's not guys debate. Just yelling at each other.
Right. Well, that's good.
Which is nice.
Yeah.
Because Chris they and just I basically, rarely.
Are you telling me they break it down?
They break
the
it
upcoming
down.
So Sunday matchups.
Just talk ball.
Yeah.
Just talk ball.
Talk about these games and their strengths and their weaknesses. Well, Jeff, let's do that in the 5 at 5 brought to you by Duplicating Systems, more than a system, a solution. Our first look at Ole Miss this weekend. We're Georgia fans. The team, as it turns out, has not decided to forfeit this weekend's game to give themselves more time to prepare for the far more important game next weekend against Tennessee. So who should Georgia fans have a big case of the scaries when looking over this Ole Miss unit?
I think that entire defensive line, Chris. Hugh Freeze had talked before the season, even though they lost Robert Kimdichie, they feel like they can go 10 deep up there. And just,
isn't every defensive line at this point scary for Georgia,
it,
though?
It absolutely is. As Georgia's O-line tries to grow and become a good unit, and perhaps it will as the season goes along there. But right now, they're clearly fighting some things. But just the pressure they're able to get, those linebackers are really, really quick. You know, offensively, Kelly's a guy, he has turned it over a lot, but I was watching some of the Ole Miss-Bama game at lunch today, and like when Kelly fumbled on the 1 yard line that time, okay, it's a bad turn. At the same time, Alabama had a 6'4", 300-pound defensive end who chased him down and stripped him. That's part of it. He didn't just drop the football there.
Yeah, good point.
So Kelly is a guy, I think he's one of those, you know, when he's rolling and things are going good, he can put up some monster numbers.
He's averaging 9 yards an attempt. And he's thrown three picks, which is not, I mean,
no,
in three games,
awful.
That's not great. But, I mean, through 13 last year, which was.
Just one a game. He's throwing one a game.
Yeah. But he is averaging 9 yards an attempt when he's not throwing picks. Or when Ole Miss's offense is not turning it over, they generally are scoring. So.
And the other thing, too, Chris, they can hit big plays. Their tight end, Evan Ingram, who's a Georgia native, whose sister, Mackenzie, plays for the Lady Dogs here.
He leads the SEC in catches.
He's very good. He can, ready for this, get vertical on you. Do you like that one?
Yes, he can. He can go
vertical on you.
He can stretch the field.
Stretch the field. So,
but you know what they don't have, Jeff, is a running back who goes downhill. I'll give you – name their running back.
I don't know. I mean, I'll say that a guy will probably get 150 on us.
I know, right? So,
yeah.
Well,
yeah.
If a guy gets 150 on us, that matches what he's rushed for. So their leading rusher's name is Akeem Judd. He has like 150 yards rushing this season.
I mean, Kelly's their biggest threat running the football.
But it's just weird to me. Like, that's been kind of a constant with Ole Miss under Hugh Freeze that they haven't had this, like, really identifiable running back.
Not since they had – was it Jeff Scott? He was a little guy who was just a jet.
Yeah, I remember
him. Very fast, and that was the last guy they had, really. And you know, again, now that we say that, they'll I've got to go.
Akeem Judd will double his rushing total.
Yeah, he'll look like Deuce McAllister out there. But that's another thing that's scary for Georgia is how many times this includes the first two games on connections that weren't made. Other teams' receivers have gotten behind this secondary.
Well, and they've – even losing Laquon Treadwell, they still have a very good deep receiving core, and that freshman Jefferson is solid.
And who was a one-time Georgia commit.
Yeah.
He's from Memphis. And that's Sean Jefferson's kid.
Yes.
But the other thing, Chris, with their receivers, and Kevin Butler brought this up Sunday, is that they're very big. They've got good size. So if you're talking about blocking, and I'm sure Ole Miss, they'll like to do a lot of receiver screens and things like that. It'll be a good test for Georgia's corners. But, again, even though you know, Georgia's gotten beat deep this year at times, and luckily North Carolina and Nicholls State didn't hit on those connections, and Missouri was moving it in the first half, I still look at this Georgia secondary now. You know, Briscoe seems to be finding his way. You know, I mean, that guy literally in a half – he went from getting toasted to, this guy's made a couple of big plays for you. You know, Mojay has got a good nose for the ball. You know, Sanders is a great player. You know, he's like for him to come up there and get a pick too. So you feel like the secondary's got some playmakers back
there.
Yeah.
You know, typically with Kelly, though, This guy's not just standing in the pocket and turning the ball over. He's turning the ball over because he's faced with pressure and he's trying to just make something happen, and he throws an ill-advised pass. Georgia has three sacks so far this season, so pressure hasn't been something they've been doing a lot of. And if Kelly is just standing in the pocket with all the time in the world to throw, then it's likely the dogs are going to get picked apart, and he's not going to be throwing those picks and turning it over.
Now, you're right. Now, at the same time, Chris, you're probably like me, I feel like the defensive line's played good, and that there have been some quick drop type things where Georgia's got to get that pressure, because a guy like Trenton Thompson, Daquan Hawkins, those guys are going to draw a lot of doubles. That pressure's got to come from that OLB / defensive end spot. And I think this defensive line is going to keep getting better and better. And also, we'll see when he comes back, but when Jonathan Ledbetter gets back, if he plays this season, we'll see. That's really a true defensive end.
Yeah, I mean, he still is out for this week.
He is out, which is fine. I mean, if he redshirts, that's fine. This young man just needs to make sure he's got everything going the right direction. It sounds like he certainly is. But, I mean, that second-team D-line from David Marshall, Clark, Carter, Rochester, those guys are all true freshmen. You got Justin Young, who's a redshirt freshman there. So I think when Ledbetter gets back, that might give Georgia more of that true end. But this is where Lorenzo Carter and Devin Bellamy, these guys have got to get some pressure on the quarterbacks. They have got to be able to get there. And I noticed that Bellamy's a good player. He's a good player. He's getting good pushes. He's solid. But that's where he's not quite Floyd or Jenkins, not quite Floyd or Jenkins athletically. The guy who is that athletically is?
Carter.
Is Lorenzo Carter. So he's got to get there. Then if he does that, that makes Bellamy better. And the other guy, too, because he had a boneheaded penalty Saturday. But if you're just talking about athleticism in that position, you've seen him, too, special teams and on defense. DeAndre Walker.
Yeah, he's made a lot of good plays on special teams this year.
He got there a couple times on defense, too. And you know, obviously the coaches, they're going to play the guys they feel give them the best chance. And Walker seems to be working his way onto the field more and more. And I would guess with him, it's a matter of consistency. But I know he's somebody that Kevin Shear has liked from day one. So that could be another pass rush option.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. I mean, no quarterback likes pressure.
No, of course not.
But, you know, when it comes to Kelly and the issues he's had with turning the ball over, to be fair to him, he's not just throwing bad passes with no heat on him whatsoever. He's one of those guys that probably hasn't really figured out when it's best just to maybe chunk one out of bounds. Like you said before the season, I mean, he's an extremely cocky kid going back to media days when I believe I'm the best quarterback in the country and that's what I want to be. And
did he even say like wanted to be the best in college football history?
I think he said in college football history. Yes, in college football history.
It's like, well, you know what? I'd like that too. I'd love to have gone to Georgia and won four national championships.
Yeah. But I mean, you figure just to be the best in SEC history, you might
Tim
have
Tim Tebow, Cam Newton, Archie Manning,
right.
Peyton Manning.
I mean the bar with Cam is, hi, I led the SEC in rushing, passing,
and
I
touchdowns.
Won the Heisman Trophy, and I was the number one pick in the draft, and my team went undefeated. We won the national title.
Tim Tebow, I counted for 55 touchdowns one year. I won two national titles at a Heisman. You know, Archie Manning,
Peyton Manning. Sure.
Ken Stabler, Joe Namath.
Right. I mean, David Green as a starter won a ton of games.
Some pretty darn good starters in the old SEC.
Right.
Danny Werfel.
Kid's got a lot of confidence in himself, but maybe that works against him too when he thinks, you know what? I should throw this out of bounds right now, but I think I can hit my guy. And then no, he can't, but he's completing 63% of his passes for 9 yards an attempt, and he does have 10 touchdown passes.
That's right.
And they've played Florida State and Bama.
And
so.
That's the thing too. And those turnovers have come against FSU and Bama. And I know FSU just got smoked, but they've
still
got great players. The McFadden guy who had, I believe, did he have two of the interceptions Labor Day night? McFadden? Georgia, we recruited that guy heavily. He was like a big-time prospect, and he showed why. But the thing, too, with a guy like Kelly, I think what's key, if you are, Chris, I think you'd agree with this. You know what we're about to do? I'm going to break it down.
We've been breaking it down, but we'll keep doing it even more.
With a guy like him, is that you have to stay disciplined with him. And sometimes that might mean giving up a little bit more. Say, okay, he got 3 yards on that scramble instead of us maybe pushing him out for no gain. You do that, You stay solid. You stay disciplined. The big plays are going to come defensively. When you make the mistake, maybe you make that gamble. Ooh, we got him out for no gain. But that next time, maybe he pulls up. That DB inches up a step. Whoop. Receiver flies by. That's when they get the big play on offense. So, again, you might give up a little bit here, give up a little bit here, give up a little bit here. But you just have to stay disciplined and not gamble defensively. You know, make them drive.
Right. Don't give him big plays where it's easy for him.
Where he kills just when he's out there running around, you got a defensive end or a linebacker chasing him, and all of a sudden, and that's the thing too, it is hard to play man-to-man against him. Because you don't want those corners that are backs turned chasing the receiver downfield. So if you're playing zone, you have to be dedicated to that spot that you're in the zone. Then what happens is that guy, let's say it's Natrez Patrick or Maurice Smith and whatever coverage you're in, then all of a sudden Kelly's scrambling. That guy who's got that middle in the old cover two, he starts sneaking up a couple of steps to try and make that tackle. Then the middle's open.
And if they score easy, that's
Georgia's
not going to be a team
not built for that.
Looks like they're. I mean, they got some guys that are capable of making explosive plays, but not with regularity at this point. Because it does. It all just boils down to it's the offensive line that's the end all be all. And whatever you want to get done and accomplish on offense, you got to be able to block it.
You got to be able to block. I mean, it's blocking and tackling, Coach.
All right. We mentioned there in that conversation two different players that had been committed to Georgia, including Ole Miss receiver Van Jefferson. There is another E.J. Price, the big offensive lineman out of Gwinnett County, who had, in flashing back to February, he had a weird signing ceremony at his school where he surprised a lot of people when he decided on USC, and it kind of just looked awkward and uncomfortable, and now Price is transferring. And there were wild internet rumors that he had actually slugged Clay Helton. And Helton came out and said that's not true, and if it were true, he'd probably be dead.
Or at least have a broken nose and two black eyes.
Yeah. Yes. So Helton says that that's not true, but Price is back on the market, Jeff. You still want him. The Dogs do need a good O-lineman.
Yes. Now, here's the thing. He wouldn't be eligible till 2018, but that would be a good get for Georgia. I think even back on signing day, it might have been predicted that who knows. Maybe one day he would end up in Athens, Georgia. But if you're peaking to 2018.
Because it was a weird, scene there.
It was.
Yeah.
So let's say then you'll have Kenley Barnes in Cleveland as either true juniors or redshirt softs. You'll have the four. And I think Georgia's going to sign, Chris, at least one more, if not two more, high school offensive linemen. Wouldn't surprise me if there's a JUCO. So you got Natori Johnson and Andrew Thomas and that whole crew. They'll be either redshirt frosh or true softs. I guess Galliard's a redshirt soft, so he would be a senior on that team. Then if you throw E.J. Price in there, now you got the makings of a pretty darn good offensive line.
Is he potentially one of those players, though, with the drama that surrounded him where he's not even there a year. He's transferring.
Oh, I mean, I'm assuming.
That maybe he's – he's more trouble than he's worth, or is he good enough that he's worth at least taking a shot on?
I think he's good enough that's worth taking a shot on. And kind of all the reports you hear, everybody says he's a great kid. He's got a real big heart. So,
but he punched his coach.
Well, is it true that you punched your coach? So I hope he's at Georgia. I think deep down he probably regrets not signing with Georgia from the get-go. And I don't know if this is legal or not, so if it's not illegal, don't follow my advice. But were I Coach Kirby Smart, I would get in contact with one Jarvis Jones and say, hey, EJ, JJ here, let me tell you the deal. Get back home, play for the Bulldogs, have a couple of great years, life changer. Because you think about now for Jarvis Jones, that whenever his pro career is over, what that guy did in those two Florida games, he'll never have to buy a burger or want for a job in the state of Georgia the rest of his life.
Yeah. I mean, they didn't have him those 2 years.
No,
I don't think
lost.
Georgia would have won either one of them.
No, I agree.
But, you never have too many good offensive linemen, so Price is, interestingly, back on the market because I mean, I think Price was one of those guys that most of the recruiting experts believed was signing here with Georgia, but then there was some...
It swung at the end.
Yeah.
Something happened.
And, like, they had that big ceremony at his school, and it was sort of... He put on that USC hat, and it was almost like he didn't want to, and...
I know.
So well, he doesn't even make it through his freshman season there.
You know, that'd be an interesting thing, too. And I get it, sitting out a year... But, you know, in basketball, stuff like that's happened before. And I know it's because it's the two-semester sport. Like, if a player were to, say, transfer, then he would be eligible in January of the next season.
Mm-hmm.
So, basically, you'd sit out, you know, through December of the next year. You know, it'd be nice to say, well, maybe he'd be eligible, you know, five games into next year. But he won't be eligible till 2018. But... You know, there's a process to go through, but I would think there's a very good shot that he winds up at Georgia, and I think he'd be happy to get back close to home.
Jeff, as we get close here, this is the final weekend of September already in college football. Which is the fan base that at the end of the first month of the season would you say is the most depressed already?
Ole Miss.
Ole Miss, you think, really?
Chris, I mean, here's why. They won the Sugar Bowl last year. They haven't gone to the Sugar Bowl since Archie.
Yeah. So they should be happy, though.
Yep. But they had a 28-6 lead over Florida State, a 24-3 lead over Alabama, and they're 1-2.
Yeah.
I mean, just because, I mean, that is, and trust me, I live in angst my life thinking of, oh, God, Pitt, Penn State, tie with Clemson. Got an 85 Tech and Vandy or the Bama game, LSU 87, Clemson 86 and 87. I literally, when I'm walking down Millage, try and make a list of 10 games from the 80s I could have back, and then the list gets to 12 or 13. And what do you think they're thinking right now? I mean, what was the stat? No team, no top 10 team had ever blown two 21-point games in a season?
Well, it is. It's amazing how close Ole Miss feels to being – like a playoff contender, but now how far they are. And it's, you know, it's a weird potential outcome for them Saturday, that if Georgia goes in there and springs an upset, they'll be 1-3 coming out of the first month of the season with the quarterback that wanted to be the best in the history of college football. They'd have lost to three teams with a freshman quarterback starting for them. That Ole Miss will have gone from, they've 22 and a 21-point lead against Florida State and Alabama, and hopefully they lose to Georgia, too, this weekend. Hopefully Georgia doesn't make it that sketchy where they're getting blown out and have to come back and win. But so if they end up coming back and win, so be it. But if they're sitting there at 1-3 after the first month of the season, they might go from a team that was in the Sugar Bowl, that at times this month have looked like the best team in the country.
The best, yes.
To, I mean, 6-6?
Yeah, no, because –
Look at their schedule.
And I mean, we'll give them the benefit of the doubt. Even if they beat Georgia and beat Memphis and they're 3-2, they come off an open night and go at Arkansas, at LSU. Those aren't locks.
Nope.
Let's say they lose one of those. They're 4-3.
Got another sketchy non-conference game.
They got Auburn at home. Give you that. Let's say they beat them, go 5-3. They got Georgia Southern the week before going to College Station.
Look out.
Then at Vandy, they'll probably beat them. They should beat Mississippi State. You never know in the Egg Bowl. I mean, I think right now you're looking at a best case to 8-4, which, again, against that schedule, I think most rational Ole Miss fans would have said, hey, you give us 8-4 with this schedule, we'll take it.
But up 28-6 and 24-3.
Yeah, and you got a taste of that Sugar Bowl last year.
Yeah.
It's and let's not forget, too, I know it goes back. The way they lost that Arkansas game last year, too, they'd have been in the SEC championship game.
Yeah. Been in the SEC title game and then rolling the way that they were. But you know, if they close out September with three losses to three teams starting freshman quarterbacks with the rest of the schedule that they've got, they've gone from the Sugar Bowl
to the Independence Bowl.
Dominating two teams that, you know, even Florida State, maybe they could still end up in that playoff somehow, even though they lost by 43 points last Saturday to, struggling just to get bowl eligible then.
Yeah, I can remember one year Ole Miss, I guess it was, they beat Florida back-to-back. What would that have been, an 0-2 and 0-3? And in one of those seasons, they beat Nebraska in the Independence Bowl. And I remember thinking, that's when I was like, man, if you'd have told an Ole Miss fan before the year, hey, you guys are going to beat Florida, and then you're going to beat Nebraska in a bowl game in Louisiana. It's like, oh, my God, we're going to win the national championship.
They didn't even get to Atlanta that year.
I think they went 7-6. Yeah. I mean, it's tough. But even if they do beat the Dogs on Saturday, I think 8-4 is their top end.
All right, Jeff.
Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I mean, that's what the thought I had after the Florida State game on Labor Day was Ole Miss in the span of, like, you know, 30 game minutes.
Yes.
Went from, hey, this team looks like they could win the national championship to they're going to go 8-4.
I mean, literally, we were doing our Bulldog Illustrated Top 25 because of Labor Day. You know, we usually go to press, obviously, Sunday night. I was telling Vance, I had my top 25. I'm like, I always put a caveat in. Hey, we went to press before this game was over, and I had Florida State like preseason 6 and Ole Miss like 17. And I was literally did a stop the presses. I'm like, I might have to put Ole Miss at number 1 right now. And then I was like, well, hang on. I was like, just leave it the way it is. I think when that comeback started, but literally that's one when it was 28-6.
If they had won the game like that, then they would have been number one.
No, I know. I mean, we were watching the game with in my buddy Vol fan Rob's house, and he goes, "Oh my gosh, you know they look like the best team in the country." I know.
Yep. Half hour later, 8-4.
As they say, Chris, it's a 60-minute.
Yes,
game.
It is. All right, Jeff. Here's my mean question.
Oh God, I hate it when is your mom listening?
I don't know.
She sticks up.
Turn
for
off
me.
The radio, mom.
She sticks up. For
yesterday
me.
We talked about Florida wooing Mississippi State's AD Scott Strickland.
Yes,
and he's when he went to Mississippi State, he's married to Bailey Howell's daughter. Bailey Howell is perhaps the greatest athlete in state history.
Get my vote.
And he's making $500,000 a year in Starkville.
Yeah.
The reports are that Florida has offered him $1.4 million. I mean, we're talking about basically tripling his current salary. Now, you said he should stay
he
in
should.
Starkville. He should stay in Starkville. So here's the question.
Uh-huh.
Tech.
Oh, God.
Tech ponies up $1.4 million for you to become their voice
not worth
of everything.
Nah, not worth selling my soul.
Wow, really?
No
$1.4 million,
no
you wouldn't become.
No way.
Okay.
No.
Wow.
Not there.
So I didn't even have to get to the real nasty part of it.
Because
if you said that, yes, you would take $1.4 million to become the voice of Tech football, I was going to read you the fine print in the contract, which said you'd have to end every broadcast by saying, good night and to hell with Georgia.
Well, here's the way I would do it. I'd say, okay, I tell you what, I'll do your first 11 games. I'm not doing the Georgia game. Or if I do, I'm going to be openly cheering for Georgia.
For $1.4
million? So, yeah.
Okay, but then the fine print is, but you have to end every broadcast with, Chris, and good night, Tech fans, and to hell with Georgia.
I value my soul, too. I couldn't do it.
Wow.
I couldn't do
it. I'm proud
of
you.
If Tech is interested in attempting to pay me over $1 million, maybe that could get Georgia to bump me up to
they would have to match it.
Can I get the minimum wage at least here?
Right, there'd be no choice but to match. So if Tech offered you $1.4 million and Georgia offered you minimum wage, you're staying here?
Staying here.
All right. Good
staying
man.
Staying here.
All right, that's the 5 at 5 brought to you by Duplicating Systems. More than a system, a solution.
I got General Nealon's 7 maxims of football when we come back.
All right.
They still hold true.
I like that guy. Yeah, one of them. I know one of them is just don't fumble, right?
Thank you.
Yeah, okay. Thanks, Coach. Time now to hear from Kirby Smart. He's got that maxim, don't fumble. And that's brought to you by Sport Clips, where it's good to be a guy.
It's time.